All right, it's Giants and Astros in Game 3 here. A very entertaining series of these two teams, the two best records in their respective leagues right now, the Astros and the Giants. Good to hear from Jim Barr as well. I like that. Good questions from Bill. As Jim Barr says, you can throw a good pitch. Yeah, you can throw a better pitch, but always make a good pitch, and that was the key. Bruce Jenkins, good morning. How are you?
Doing well. Thanks a lot, Marty.
Yeah, I like that advice from Jim Barr, you know, because that's when pitchers get in trouble. And you and I have talked about these relievers who come in and, you know, want to make the perfect pitch. You don't have to. Just make a good pitch.
Yeah, and he was really known for just pinpoint control. I remember watching him at USC. He and Brent Strom, actually, who's the Astros pitching coach, were teammates at USC, and that was a formidable combination. But, you know, he gets to the Giants, and his whole thing was, you know, just a little bit like Greg Maddux. You know, he didn't throw the hardest in the league, but he made good pitches just one after another. He put it where he wanted, and that takes you a long way.
Yeah, boy, remember, Jim, I think you and I may have talked about it, or I did a memory of the game about it. Giants greatest game, but he used to hook up with Gibson. Remember the matchups
yeah.
he had with Gibson in the early 70s?
Holding his own.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah, there's great contrast there. You know, Gibson was all intimidation and it's just unbelievable slider and just a towering presence out there. And Barr had a lot of presence too. It was just in a different way because he was unflappable and he had great command. And you just knew that, you know, he knew what he was doing. And you're not going to put a five spot up there against him.
No, you know, and it was an interesting interview because he talks mental side, being mm-hmm. in the moment, as opposed to just bringing in, which today you come in, you throw 98, 99, 97, and you're just trying to throw as hard as you can. But for him, it's always the mental game of throwing the good pitch. It's a real vis-a-vis what baseball used to be and what it is today, especially pitching.
Well, anytime you can get vis-a-vis in there, Marty, you're ahead of the game.
Really? Hey, Woe got Thunk in there today. Woe said Thunk. I thought that was pretty good. I'm talking like a lawyer now. All right, enough of that. Hey, yesterday, 5 home runs for the Giants, and now today it's Chris Bryant Day. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, Chris Bryant's probably thinking, what the heck do they need me for? These guys have enough power. But it's what a wonderful thing that he joins the cast. You know, it really at a perfect time. He can come in at third base. Flores has been pretty good there, but he's not super comfortable defensively, as we see really time and again. And you know, they got to keep his bat in there somehow. But Bryant, he can play left field. That's a spot where they need him. He can play first base, as you guys have talked about this a lot. And it's such a great pickup. It's just going to be interesting to see how many positions he plays over a couple weeks' time, probably at least three.
Well, I think also it's a real boost for the fans. I mean, really, can you imagine when he hits his first home run or, you know, makes the first big defensive play? And he doesn't displace a lot of people coming onto the team. And I think that's important, too, for everyone to look at him and say, okay, Chris Bryant is here, but we're still here with him.
Yeah, it's so important at the deadline to make your fans and the team feel good. You know, the flip side was up in Seattle where Jerry DePoto traded away Kendall Graveman after he pitches, you know, typically great game, one of the best relievers in the game. They had a great win. Everything's good. They're right there in the race. And he trades him for, you know, a couple guys you've barely heard of. And the clubhouse is just up in arms, as are the fans, the writers, everybody. And here at Farhan Zaidi, you wonder, is he going to do anything? Is he going to do anything? And finally, very late, he makes the perfect move. And the fans and then the clubhouse is all jacked up. And those things really matter.
Yeah, they do. And look at what the Cubs did and look what Washington did. And we had mm-hmm. Keith Law on yesterday. And, you know, he said, you know, the Cubs got some players back. And, you know, it's going to be a long haul for Washington as well. And they got some, you know, the two from the Dodgers, you know, pretty good prospects there. But what was interesting for me, looking at Javier Baez yesterday as a Met, and he hit a home run. Rizzo hits a home run for the Yankees. And now here's Bryant. It's like they're sprinkling the Chicago Cubs throughout baseball. And these guys are winners. They're winners.
Well, I love where they wound up. I mean, Javier Baez, you can't get, you know, too big of a stage or too much of a canvas for pure showmanship for him to play with the Mets. And to hit one out, and you know, there's Lindor in the dugout, his good friend. They're going to be teaming up. Just a great thing for a team that was a little down after losing DeGrom once again for a while. But then Rizzo in Yankee Stadium, does he look made for that place? He's already hit two. And he'd hit 50. He'll hit 50 next year playing there, I predict, because he's just got that perfect Deadpool swing. And they got the short porch, but so far those two home runs he hit would have been out at any park. Great acquisition there.
Yeah, and it's nice to see. And so that's why I say here, there's those two making an impact right away. These are champions. These guys are still on the top of their game. They're not 35 years old and through. And here comes Bryant. Was Bryant 30 maybe?
Something like that.
Yeah, here comes Bryant into this ballpark. And wait till he makes an impact. It's going to be pretty dramatic. And I think the team needs it. I think everybody needs it to just believe in what's coming here for the next couple of months. So I think it's a big acquisition. I really do.
Yeah, and you can tell he gets a big kick out of the game. He's not really a showman as such, but you know he'll crack a smile. He enjoys making the great play. You can see how much he loves the game, and that stuff, you know, that matters with the fans and the guys on the team. And he's an instantly likable guy.
How'd you like Gabe Kapler's birthday cake yesterday?
I missed that episode.
Oh, you didn't see it? Okay, they brought him a birthday cake. You know, he has, he loves having two steaks a day with, you know, also the protein. And they made a cake that looks like a ribeye with a baked potato next to it. I guess there was a cake also. And everybody had fun with it. He's a youngish man, and they had fun with him. And I think what it showed me is that he could sort of have fun poked at him. And
yes.
He's made a major adjustment in his life from Philadelphia, Bruce.
Yeah, he really has. I mean, he's always been a guy, when you find out about him, he's always been sort of a seeker, you know, looking for the perfect truth here and there, and very willing to embrace new things. It's his whole upbringing with his parents and, kind of a radical approach to life and choosing your own path. And he's adjusting as it goes, and it's pretty it's nice to know for the Giants fans that he has made several big adjustments in terms of managing strategy and maybe even as a person to being sensitive to criticism and being able to poke fun at himself. And you know that's only going to keep going, I would think. I mean, he's a very interesting guy, and you know sometimes you see him so damn serious. You wonder if he could really find it funny that there was a cake that looked like a steak, but he took it exactly the right way, and I think the players knew that he would, so that was a good thing.
Yeah, it was about a foot high, you know, like a ribeye, like you get at the House of Prime. No, I shouldn't say that. Original Joe's, not the House of Prime Rib, but you know, it looked like that, and they actually had fun with him. And I think he has grown in the job. And I think winning helps. But if you listen to his interviews, and I listen to Dave and John do the cap show, as I like to call it, he actually answers questions, and he gives you answers. And that's different than the way he was in Philadelphia.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't around him in Philadelphia, but he listens. That's a very important thing. I mean, I've known a lot of managers where you go in there, he knows what you're going to ask. He's a little ticked off about it, and he's not really going to answer it. That's something we're going to keep to ourselves or whatever. But Gabe always tries to give you an honest answer and looks the questioner in the eye. I mean, oftentimes, mention the questioner by name, whether it's Janie or John, whoever it is, and that stuff is all matters.
Yeah, no, and I listened to Dave and John, and they ask real questions. You know, why'd you do this? Why'd you do that?
Yeah.
What do you expect here? And what about the trade deadline? He actually answers the questions.
The great thing about that is that once you get in with a manager like that, and you know that it's kind of fair game to ask tough questions, then everybody's a little bit more comfortable. You know, you learn how to phrase him the best way, and he's gonna come back at you with a good answer, and it's just ongoing, and that relationship just gets stronger and stronger. I think the guys had that with Bochy, who wasn't always too forthcoming, but he was ready for what was coming at him, and again, like you said, winning does help. we've seen Bochy and Kapler, in fantastic circumstances, so that always helps.
Yeah, what about your experience? Now, you covered Billy Martin. Could you go into Billy Martin and ask him questions about strategy?
Oh, God, yes. He's the best example. Now, sometimes if he was really in a snit, in a fury. You almost didn't even want to go in there. But I remember for most of the days, myself, Kit Starer, Bud Geraci, and the byplay with Billy Martin was unbelievable. And you really could ask him anything. And he was unbelievably forthcoming. I mean, just almost brutally so, sometimes to the opposition or to his own players. But smartest baseball guy I've ever been around. The in-game managing was unbelievable. And you know, you wanted to make sure you were on safe ground asking him something where it wasn't a stupid question. But, yeah, he was the – and Frank Robinson also. We all had to sort of cross that line where he got comfortable with us. But once that happened, man, you could just go. And it was so enlightening.
How about Tony La Russa?
Yeah, a little different. He's really guarded. You know, the interesting thing about La Russa was he was the most interesting if you ran into him at the hotel bar. and he's had a couple, and there's
yes,
maybe a couple
has.
Of us with him. I remember one night in Anaheim where Bud Geraci and I and Tony La Russa had the most unbelievable conversations, all about baseball. Very, very, very enlightening and forthcoming. But he could be pretty tight-lipped after games, depending on what happened, because he's just such a he's a major red ass when he's upset, and you can see the steam coming off the top of his head. but again, a very interesting guy and a winner, and you learn an awful lot of ball from him.
Yeah, he was not one you could go in and say, you know, Tony, I thought maybe you should have bunted here.
No, that's right, yeah.
No, that wasn't
exactly
going to happen with him.
Yeah.
I'll tell you another one who was like that was Jim Fregosi. Remember him?
Yeah, oh, hell yeah, yeah. He could be really tough.
Yeah, you couldn't go in and you know, ask him anything about, you know, the strategy.
No, absolutely nothing. John McNamara could be very, very bitter.
Okay.
One interesting guy, but Earl Weaver was great. He'd say, all right, Tim Kirchen, I know you're going to ask me why I bunted there. Well, I'll tell you why I bunted there. I know it didn't work out, but here's what I was thinking. He didn't need the question.
I like it. That's good.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about Sparky?
Oh, he was just sort of godlike. He and Jim Leyland, you know, you go in there and you just feel like you're in the presence of royalty, and two extremely interesting guys there. And both great, you know. You could once again, you could bring stuff up, and next thing you know, you get a really good conversation going where you could never get that far with somebody like Fregosi or some of the other guys who really, really weren't. They might have been suited for managing, but they weren't suited for the media part, which is huge. You know, that's a very important part of the job, because if the writers, you know, start getting down on you, and the team's going well, and maybe players are complaining about this and that, it just really sours. So it really helps to have that media thing in control.
Yeah, Terry Collins had trouble. I remember.
Oh, my God. He's the worst ever. or am I thinking of – no, Terry Bevington.
Terry Bevington was the next one I was going to bring up. Yeah, how about Terry Bevington?
He's the worst ever. He last like 8 minutes on the job? I mean, yeah.
He used to sit there with the cat on his lap or something. I remember it was something crazy.
I think it was a leopard.
Yeah, but you couldn't ask him any. I mean, you could not ask him anything.
He was ready to explode.
Very good. These are fine. And Dusty, what about Dusty?
Dusty was really, really good. Really, really good. Sometimes I thought he might have been a little sensitive to criticism, but I remember I wrote that one day. We may have talked about this, and he called me into his office the next day to kind of, you know, give me the lowdown. And his dad was there. It was like me and Dusty and his dad sitting there just presiding over this. I'm thinking, oh, my God, I'm going to get hammered here. And it was all, you know, it was all very civil. I've had a great relationship with Dusty. But, you know, he could come back at you. And he's very, very strong in his beliefs. But the thing about Dusty is that you could start a conversation about anything. You know, you could, after a tough loss, a third question might be, you know, well, that's all well and good, but did you see John Lee Hooker on the tube last night? You know, I mean, just anything. And he's ready. I've never seen anybody in any walk of life who was so comfortable in so many different scenarios with so many different people of different backgrounds and likes and dislikes and cultures. And it's the whole kaleidoscope, or whatever you want to call it, of life. He's so tuned into so many things. And it's why he's so relevant as a manager now. He's in his 70s, but he'll go into the clubhouse and find out what each guy is sort of into and what they like to do. And and make sure he can have a conversation about that with the player. Not his at bat in the third inning, but you know, something completely different that makes them both comfortable.
Well, Joe Maddon's like that too.
Yeah, very much so. He's a hoot. He's really, really interesting and perfect guy to be managing Ohtani because he's so open minded and he doesn't hold some old school thing where, well, I don't know if we can really let him hit tonight. I think he's going to need a rest or this or that, or we got to take him out after the fourth inning. You know, he's really gives Ohtani as much rope as any manager I think would do in the bigs, and it's paying off in a massive way.
Well, for me, Art Howe and Maka were the two best. And Art, mm-hmm. you know, Art, I mean, because I didn't know any better then, because it's when I started. And I didn't really understand all the protocols, so I would say, you know, we'd sit and talk, and I'd say, well, wait a minute, why'd you bring Buddy Groom in? You know, Paul O'Neill is 10 for 15 against him. What were you doing? I mean, you know, we would talk like that, and he would explain the answers and everything. And Maka was a little bit, little shyer about, you know, when you brought something up. But I thought Art was terrific.
Yeah, he really was. And as we've mentioned before, it was such a shame to see him so miserably portrayed in the Moneyball movie. They couldn't have gotten it more wrong. Because you know he was a very upstanding guy with, you know, great values, super smart, a very underrated player. He personally destroyed the Dodgers at the end of the 1980 season. But you could talk to him about a lot of things too. A very interesting guy, good hire.
Yeah, he always told that story about that you're talking about, that playoff game essentially that put him in the playoffs for Houston. And Dave Goltz was pitching. Remember Dave Goltz, G-O-L-T-Z?
Yeah, he had two homers off Goltz.
Yeah, and Doug Harvey was the umpire. And I think it was about the fourth inning, and Art was up there with two on. And Goltz threw a pitch, and I guess it just missed, and Goltz wanted it. And maybe Socha was catching. He wanted it.
Yeah.
And Doug Harvey looked at Art and said, Art, don't take that pitch again. and Goltz threw the next pitch, and Art hit it out for a three-run homer. And he crossed home plate, and he looked at Doug Harvey, and he said, I didn't take it that time.
Wow, and that's interesting. Yeah,
but
wow.
That was Art.
Doug Harvey, yeah.
Yeah, what got us on this I wonder how many umpires actually, you know, get into it.
Oh,
like
God.
That.
Yeah.
But
not
what
many
got
today.
Us, yeah, what got us on it is Gabe Kapler. And I think he's tending in that direction, which is obviously, after we've talked about a number of managers, the most complimentary are the ones who open up and are not defensive, and maybe Gabe is heading that way.
Yeah, and it's you know, the Giants are definitely heading for the postseason in one way or another, and it'd be awfully cool to see them win the division and not just have a one game where you just disappear in 24 hours, but to get into a playoff series with the national media, you know, heaven help us, it wouldn't be by Zoom, probably will be, but you know, just to where he's getting a sort of a national audience for what he has to say over the course of a few days, and that'll be terrific for him and his reputation.
Yeah, I agree with you. Very good. I'm glad we talked about that. Joey Votto hit a homer in seven straight games. Did you see it last night, Bruce, at all?
No, he hit that little yellow strip of padding.
Come on.
That's very
he
like
missed
Ian
by
Kinsler
a foot.
At the Giants Park. It hit the very top of the padding. Unbelievable.
He missed by a foot.
Yeah.
By less than a foot of knocking it out. And oh, boy. I was kind of rooting for him to get it.
Oh, definitely. Get in there with Dale Long and Griffey and Mattingly.
So instead, he's with Jim Thome, Kevin Mensch. How about Kevin Mensch? Remember him?
He was a Mensch.
Yeah, he was. for 7 days, he was when he hit seven homers in a row.
Yeah.
Barry Bonds and Jake Peavy finally stopped him. I remember that.
No, I did.
And Kendrys Morales, who had one of the worst injuries ever in baseball.
Oh, he did, yeah. Oh,
when he crossed home plate, jumped up and down, and broke his ankle, he was never the same.
Right, yeah. Pretty good power hitter in his day. But, yeah, that was a lesson for all to take heed. Don't go too crazy in the celebration. I always worry about somebody at the very bottom of a pile, and he's under there, and after a while, I can't really breathe here, and more guys are piling on him, like in the College World Series. It's like, damn, give the guy a break, you know?
Really. Well, this has been a good series with Houston. This has been fun, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I love Houston. I mean, I've always liked the team. I've been in their corner all the way through this, just hoping that they get out of it you know, learn from it and continue to play good ball. And they absolutely have. You know, they knocked the A's out of it last year, and they're the best team in that division again. The lineup is just sensational, and, you know, Dusty's doing a great job. They picked up a couple of relievers. You know, the Graveman is huge. It's a big pickup. The bullpen didn't let him down yesterday, but that's going to be good. But, you know, Correa and Altuve and Brantley, and that's just a really, really good club. Very fun to watch. And you know, they had a lot of moments yesterday, and the Giants still beat them. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah, you know, and I was going to say, and when Bill and I talk about it later on, I haven't seen a team yet that scares me when they play the Giants. I don't think the Giants have to take a second seat to anybody they've played this year, and we're at August 1st.
Yeah, that's really true. That's why I was thinking about the Dodgers, and you know, you can say that they should win it, and they've got the personnel. But when it actually comes down to it, what, the Giants have won like 7 of the last 9 or something like that against them. Mm-hmm. I mean, and they've been great in Dodger Stadium. You know, when it comes back to the actual games, the Giants are on even terms with everybody.
Exactly, everybody. Yeah. Everybody. There isn't anyone yet that's pushed them around. And the Dodgers are still 3 back, and they won yesterday, and they've got Urias today. And I said it was like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid for the Giants. Every time the Giants turn around, then the Dodgers are only 3 back. What are you doing here?
Yeah, who are those guys?
Yeah, who are, you know, come on. You know, you're having a, you know, you got a lot of trouble. Why are you only 3 back? And that's what we got going on. Well, a couple of quick historical notes. 1982, I love that. I wish I was there for this. Hall of Fame induction of Frank Robinson, Hank Aaron, the great Travis Jackson, who we've talked about on the show, the Giants shortstop, and Happy Chandler. How about that?
Happy Chandler. You know, oddly enough, he was very irritable. He never even smiled. No, I'm kidding. They called him Happy in college because he was such a cheery fellow, and it stuck. I mean, you better have a pretty good disposition if you're going to go by Happy. You know, hey, yeah. Happy, what's going on? Get out of my face. But Happy Chandler, all jokes aside, was a very influential man. His Hall of Fame induction was very, very worthwhile. He grew up in Kentucky in a very segregationist kind of atmosphere, especially in those days. But he was a fair-minded man, and he's the guy who replaced Kennesaw Mountain Landis as the commissioner. After being governor of Kentucky, by the way, and wanted to run for vice president with FDR and didn't quite make it there, but he turned to baseball. He gets hired as a commissioner, and just before he gets hired, that's when Branch Rickey signed Jackie Robinson to play in Montreal, which was a huge thing in the minor leagues. And Happy Chandler knew that this was coming to a head, and so did Branch Rickey. And to Happy's everlasting credit, he completely supported this move that when the Dodgers were going to sign him to play in the big leagues. And at that time, it wasn't necessarily a fashionable approach at all. I mean, racism was rampant, as Jackie Robinson discovered. There was that one episode, I'm sure you're familiar with, when Jackie, he took all kinds of heat. But one day against the Phillies, Ben Chapman, who was a real bastard managing the Phillies, and a bunch of the players were just all over Jackie Robinson with just some wicked racist taunts. And Happy Chandler said, you do that again and you guys are going to be suspended. Mm. You know, not a popular stance, but he was in Jackie Robinson and Branch Rickey's corner, and they needed him in the worst way.
Yeah, he was a big, big influence. He was a senator when they came to tap him to be the commissioner. They thought about Fort Frick, but he was a baseball guy, and baseball was going into the TV age, the radio age was going to be bigger. And they saw the change on the horizon, and they said, well, we need a politician now in Washington as opposed to Fort Frick, who was a baseball guy. So Happy lasted about 6 or 7 years, and then they got sick of him, and then they made Fort Frick the commissioner. And that's what happened.
Yeah, and Happy Chandler, he was an athlete. He was a great three-sport athlete in Kentucky growing up, and so he wasn't unfamiliar with you know, what was real and what isn't in sports. So, interesting hire. He wasn't there long, but he definitely made a difference.
Yeah, he did. A very important time for him to stand up, and it took a lot of courage to do it. All right, well, that's a good historical note. We'll stop on that one. Well, Giants, Astros today. Luis Garcia, Logan Webb. Bruce, I said Logan Webb is getting better.
Yeah, absolutely. You talk about a guy who to make a good pitch, maybe you're not throwing as hard. He throws pretty hard, but he has the kind of stuff where if he could ever reach that Jim Barr state where he can put his pitches where he wants to, it's going to be an amazing thing, because I think guys are blown away, his own teammates and those in the other team. They see some of the pitches from this guy, and they go, good grief, you know, that I can't hit that, you know. And he's got that in his arsenal, so he's not terribly, terribly wild either. So I think that there's a pretty good chance that he can corral all that and get some command out there.
Yeah, 22 walks, 70 strikeouts. So it's over 3-1. All right, have a great Sunday, and we'll talk next week.
Sounds good, Marty. Talk then.
All right. Thanks, Bruce. Thank you. All right. That is a great Bruce Jenkins. Coming up, we have an author coming up, Steve Steinberg, wrote a book about comeback pitchers. And what do you hear about these two guys? And when you look through the record books of baseball, you see these names. And Steve Steinberg and Lyle Spatz did a good book about these comeback pitchers. So we'll come back with him right after this on the Sports Leader.